Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best of new inventory with great warranties, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, and a fabulous service department that backs it up with great technicians at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Dick Girardi in a few moments. First, our play-by-play call of the day. A Penn State opponent, Furman, punches its ticket to the dance for the first time since 1980.
Foster back to Pegues. Up ahead to Slauson. To Buckwell. Rises and finishes. Furman pulls the sword from the stone. And the Paladins are dancing for the first time in 43 years.
And we welcome everyone back, and my broadcast partner for the last 19 seasons, who has obviously endured a lot, joins us now, Dick Girardi. DJ, welcome.
Thank you, Steve. And yes, endurance is my middle name.
Team has its back to the wall on the morning of February 14th. They are 14-11. They're 5-9 in the conference. And your advice was simple: win them all. Well, they've won 5 of 6 in this 6-game streak. What have been some of the common threads that's allowed them to succeed?
Yeah, I mean, individually, obviously, Jalen Pickett went wild, right? He had the 41-point game in the first game of the 6 against Illinois, then backed it up with a huge game at Minnesota. So that was the first part of it. I think they got their confidence back, Steve, even in the loss at Maryland. They got to that point where it was, say, 14-11, 5-9 of the league, and that carried through, I think, really the rest of the season. And the biggest difference was, unlike earlier when they were losing all the close games, all of a sudden they started winning all but the Rutgers game. Minnesota was close. Ohio State was close. And obviously the last two were decided on the last shot of the game. And both went Penn State's way. And over time, that is generally supposed to even out. There have been seasons when it has not. But this year it's kind of just about 500 on those one possession games in the final 5 minutes. And now I think we said this on the broadcast, but the results have now mirrored the performance. This team has always played like an NCAA team. Now they have the results and the resume of an NCAA team.
When you look at the small lineup, that as what we refer to, in other words, they bring Miles Dredd onto the floor, they take the center off the floor, or it could be an Evan Mahaffey. Why has that been so successful?
I think it's really, really hard to guard. Most importantly, I think teams freak out guarding it. And I think it affects their offenses, Steve, because they often take their big men off the floor. And obviously that's Penn State's Achilles heel, is they're not a big team, and defending the post and layups has been the hardest thing for this group to do. So by having the other team be kind of so concerned about defending your offense, actually I think also helps makes Penn State's defense better. And to amplify on your first question, obviously one of the biggest differences has been Cameron Winter. Yep. He's been awesome in this stretch, and obviously had 2 straight game winners. But it wasn't just those game winners. He has played really well. And, again, this is coaching and a feel for your team. And Cam was struggling. I mean, he had lost his starting spot for a couple of games. And he was mostly struggling because he couldn't make a jump shot. And Mike just said, hey, you know what, go do what you do. Find your spot on the floor where you're comfortable. Well, he started to feel comfortable again, drove, got to the mid-range, and now all of a sudden he's hitting everything, 3s included. So, yeah, I think that was a huge individual part of this late run. I mean, Cam had a really good start to this season.
Yeah.
And it's a long year, and he isn't the only one that had a couple games where he wasn't as good as he was in others. But he's been great. And to have a player of his experience and actually has an NCAA resume, he's been in the tournament, he's won a conference tournament, I think that's going to be gigantic. And obviously, two straight game-winning shots, three in a follow layup, doesn't get much more dramatic than that.
He told us the other day when we talked to him about how he's learned to play the game with Pickett.
Yep.
Let's face it, Dick, you and I both know that for him, who was so, for the most part, ball-centric at Drexel, that would be quite an adjustment for him.
For sure. And not only are you no longer the primary ball handler, you're on a team where one guy has the ball almost all the time, as he should. I mean, Pickett is going to start making, as they're announcing All-American teams, I think he's Sporting News announced theirs today. He's on the second-team All-American team, and hopefully he makes a couple first teams because he deserves it. It was a huge adjustment, and when you're used to playing with it, when do you cut? When do you play off it? And clearly, a couple of times. But after the, I can't remember if it was with us or when I was listening to the post game on the way home, but somebody, I think it was the post game, somebody was asking Mike about that last play. And he said, obviously we're going to give the ball to Pickett, let him make a decision. And if they're guarding him one-on-one, like Ohio State did at the end, he's just going to go score.
Yeah.
And then he had three players around the three-point line to spread the defense. And then he put Winter in the dunker spot on the opposite side from where Pickett was in case there's a rebound. Well, there was a rebound.
Yeah.
And he was there, and he got it. That's great coaching because I don't know that I've ever – maybe other people have done that, but that was pretty cool. I mean, the odds on that ball coming there were slim when it was shot.
Sure.
Because of where it was shot from. But you know what? You can't get it if you're not there. And, of course, then the ball got tipped there. And it was Seth said in the post game that he tipped it over to Winter. I mean, I saw a lot of Maryland players there. Frankly, I couldn't tell who tipped what. But the good news is for Penn State, the ball bounced correctly for them.
Well, yeah, Seth says he's the one that tipped it over to him. Look, he knew he missed it because he was charging to the bucket.
Absolutely.
When you and I have been around Seth Lundy and Miles Dredd more than any other player on this team because they are the fourth and fifth year players respectively on this team. They put themselves in this spot. I thought we heard the genuine emotion from Miles in the post game. We talked to him about what being in this spot means to him.
Yeah, Steve. I 3 years ago it was such a good team. I mean, there can't be many better teams in the history of Penn State basketball than that team. And by the way, I don't know if people saw Lamar Stevens in overtime last night against Boston going wild, but. Made a couple of big moves. But, the fact that they didn't get an opportunity was, a lot of teams didn't. Obviously, nobody got an opportunity to play, but, Duke plays in it every year. Penn State doesn't get that chance. And for Lamar and Mike Watkins, and I should have mentioned him Sunday, but obviously John Harris, such an integral part of the program, didn't get to play in a tournament they deserved to play in. It's just so cool for Miles and Seth, who are the last remaining players from that team, that they're going to get a shot, and I do think they're going to get a shot to play. And they can represent all the guys that didn't get a chance to play. And, of course, all the guys like Jalen Pickett, he's going to get his first shot at Andrew Funk, and guys who had great storied careers who just need a bow on top, and they're going to get it. And I've been telling people this for weeks. I said, if Penn State gives in, they are going to be one of the most dangerous Big Ten teams because of how they play. And nobody has seen – nobody plays like that. I mean, literally nobody in the country plays like that.
Exactly. Because the Big Ten, the problem they'll have in the tournament, at least my opinion, is so much of the game is played in a phone booth. And, there's a big wide 94-by-50 world out there. That to me is a big difference, and Penn State plays that way.
Yeah, Penn State uses it, and in a league where hardly anybody runs, obviously Iowa runs, they're trying to outscore you, and that's why there's so much fun to watch. Penn State will run with anybody. They just don't get that much opportunity in the Big Ten because nobody wants to run. Everybody wants to go slow. So I think if they're in a tournament setting with another team that's looking at them, going, I don't know, not all that athletic, and they're kind of small, and they want to run up and down the court. Yeah, they could knock out 15 threes and blast that team right on out of there. But, yeah, that's fun, and that's speculation, and, you know, that's for next week. But,
you're right.
You know, what's in front of them is an opportunity to just enhance the resume, right? Just what have we been saying? Just win. Just win as many games as you can win. They're able to win Thursday. That would be they'd be up to 20 wins, which isn't the number magic number that it used to be, but it's still a real good number to have.
Yeah.
And it's the draw is fascinating because if the seeds hold at the bottom of the bracket, and Penn State, if they win, they would then play Northwestern, and then they would play Indiana. They're 4-0 against it.
Right.
So, yeah, what does it mean? Yeah, who knows? It's weird.
Right.
But, I mean, they pounded Illinois twice. They pounded Indiana, and obviously beat Northwestern on the last-second shot. But to me, the one matchup that's the most difficult for them is Purdue, just because of the strength and and Edie. Although I think they could actually play with them in the right circumstance. Last time was not the right circumstance when a player who's hit, what, 9 threes the rest of the season made 9 threes
right.
in the game.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, what was that all about? But yeah, I think they're competitive with everybody, but it's not like they're anybody stands above anybody else in the league, and I think the standings really reflect that. And even now, like, Minnesota played Wisconsin down to the wire the other night.
Yep.
There's no game you would feel terribly confident saying, well, I know that's going to happen. I don't remember the league ever being this close. You know, I thought 3 years ago was one of the best leagues since I've been doing this. I thought there were three or four teams that could have made the Final Four that year. I don't know if that's the case this year, but I do know Chicago's going to be fun because, like, every game could be like the last week was, right, with one crazy finish after another.
Penn State has had success with Illinois during the course of this season. Why?
Yeah, I think a couple things, Steve. I think they were able to use, certainly in the first game, Illinois was playing a very different style than they're playing now, but they were able to use how aggressive they were chasing the ball against them, and really Illinois never could figure out what was happening.
Right.
And then in the second game, they're not, and it'd be interesting to see. I got to think Brad Underwood's going to change what they've done again, but they were singling Pickett the whole game. They never ran a second guy.
That's right.
And they tried every defender they had, and none of them could do anything with him. I mean, it was just one of those days where he was just phenomenal from all over the court and making threes. So I think they don't have a great matchup for Pickett, and hardly anybody does when you try to single cover him. And I think that as athletic as they are, when you watch them, they take some wild shots.
Yeah.
And sometimes wild shots lead to runouts. And, I mean, they're dangerous because they're so athletic. And, you know, a guy like Shannon could hit 8 threes.
Yeah.
But he could also go over it. Just,
right.
You hope it's the day that they're going over. But, yeah, they're probably of the teams in the Big Ten, I would say they're the least predictable as to what might happen.
Exactly. I agree.
They have a lot of young, talented players and a lot of older, talented players, but none of these players have ever really played with each other until this year. And there's games like against Texas when they made the great comeback, they look great. And there's other games that look like they never played together.
Right.
So I'm sure Coach Underwood is having that same feeling when he watches his team play. But I mean, they're dangerous, but they're no more dangerous than Maryland would be or Michigan or anybody else. I mean, you were going to have to play one of these teams, and I think the fact that they've beaten them pretty handily twice, I think it puts it a little – yeah, I wonder, Illinois, maybe they're questioning the situation, right? Well, wait a second. We got hammered by this team. Maybe they tried too hard. But, again, I don't dislike the matchup, but – you got to go do it.
Yeah,
and
right.
good news is Penn State's playing their best ball of the year at the time when you want to be playing your best ball.
Plus, Epps has been out the last two games.
Yep.
He got a concussion.
Yeah.
I guess I think it was in practice. He got an elbow to the jaw.
Yeah. So there's some question whether he'll play. And he had played well down the stretch.
And that means Shannon's been the point guard. And when he's the point guard, that means he's the smallest guy out there at 6'6".
Yeah. Now, they are huge. And the other thing that's interesting is their defensive numbers, unlike, say, Rutgers or Northwestern, they're more based on block shots than steals.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's hard to block shots against a team that's launching 33s.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons their defense has maybe not been as effective against Penn State as it's been against a lot of the rest of the league, which is more oriented toward getting the ball to the rim with Edey and Jackson Davis and Dickinson and all the really good centers in the league. So Penn State's kind of that's kind of an antidote for a shot blocking team when you're strictly a perimeter oriented team, which Penn State is. And when they go to the rim, it's mostly just picket. And Illinois is clearly, especially after the first game when they got three ball to death, they're clearly scared of singling picket because they know, like in the last two games, right, everybody was double teaming him. So what did he have? I think he had 18 assists and two turnovers in the last two games. So you can double team all you want, but he's going to find somebody open. And on that team, when they're open, it's usually from three. And when they're making them, it adds up in a hurry.
March Madness is basketball, but it doesn't mean it can't translate to other venues. I was driving in the car, and for some reason I was drawn to Horse Racing Network.
Down the stretch. Dave Johnson, Bill Finley.
The great Patrick. Dave Johnson. Yep. Even better guy.
Indeed.
Yep.
Down the stretch they come. The legend himself.
And I heard this familiar voice talking about a Parks version of March Madness.
Right. So today, Steve, at the track, my home track where I go, like 20 minutes from where I live, in beautiful Bensalem, PA, in Bucks County, is hosting what they are calling Parks Madness, where they're having 11 races. Three of them are stakes races. The other eight are named after the Big Five schools, Drexel, Delaware Valley University, and Penn State. And each of the races has like a name, and it's in honor of Penn State and a number of the former coaches and players from Penn State are going, and the other schools are going to be at the track today. They're just going to have a good time. Ben Luber, I believe, is going to make an appearance as a Penn Stater. Of course, Ben played in the early 2000s. He was recruited by Jerry Dunn, played 4 years for Coach Chellis from Council Rock High School, now the head coach at the George School in Newtown, PA, which won their first ever Friends League championship this year. So Ben will be there. Mike Breeswick, who you called a number of Mike's games when he was playing for Coach Channing at Temple. Mike will be there with some of his teammates. Rashid Bey from St. Joe's. The great Speedy Morris from LaSalle. Harry Pratt, the Hall of Fame women's coach at Villanova, big racetrack guy. Two people will be out there. Everybody will have a good time, and we'll get ready for Parks Madness. We'll get us ready for March Madness.
Yeah. I would be remiss if I didn't ask if there's any horse we should keep an eye on in these early races, not just at Parks, but across the country, as we start thinking about the first Saturday in May.
Yeah, I mean, the two-year-old champ, Forte, made his 2023 debut Saturday, Steve, and could not have been any more impressive.
Right.
Won the Fast Youth at Gulfstream Park for Todd Fletcher, who, of course, is one of the legends in the game. And if the Derby was run today, he would be the favorite. But I'm going to give you a horse who's only run twice. He's going to run next, probably in the Santa Anita Derby.
Yep.
Named Arabian Knight. He's probably the most talented of the bunch. Now, he's caught up in the whole Baffert lunacy. Like, Baffert can run horses anywhere right now, except at Churchill Downs' own tracks. And, of course, the problem is, Churchill Downs owns Churchill Downs, which happens to be where the Kentucky Derby is held.
Yeah.
So through this year's Kentucky Derby, Baffert cannot run horses there. So Arabian Nights training has been sent to another trainer named Tim Yakteen, who had a lot of the Baffert horses last year. The difference between this year and last year with the Baffert horses, Baffert is not banned from the track. Last year he had a 90-day suspension at this time. A general suspension for what happened in the 2021 Derby with Medina Spirit.
Yeah.
That's long over. So Baffert will be there. Technically, he's not supposed to be overseeing the training of Arabian Night, but he can watch the horse on the track every day. He can see what's going on, and I suspect he Mr. Yakteen might be having a few conversations. But anyway, that's a real talent. So yeah, we're getting through the second series of Derby Preps, and then the final right. series comes the first week in April, Florida Derby, San Antonio Derby, Bluegrass Stakes, Arkansas Derby, Wood Memorial, all the familiar names, and then they'll start to sort themselves out as they head for Kentucky in the first Saturday of May. But yeah, I mean, I could go on a riff about the whole Baffert Churchill dance thing. Just silly. But,
and we will at some point.
We will. After this particular edition of the Derby, Baffert can go anywhere, anytime. Mm-hmm. So that ban from Churchill will be over.
To paraphrase Bill Belichick, on to Chicago.
Yes, indeed. And I think I have a slightly afternoon play. When are you going out?
Tomorrow, let's say Wednesday at slightly afternoon.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. All right, well, I'll be awaiting you with the sheriff.
Well done. Well done. Thanks, DJ.
Yes, sir. Thank you, pal.
The great Dick Girardi. As always, great to have him on. We're on tomorrow night at 6 o'clock Eastern Time. Tip-off set for 6:30 at the United Center here in Chicago. We'll stay in Chicago in the final half hour. Talk with Dave Revson of BTN. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final half hour today here in Chicago as Penn State gets ready to take on Illinois in the Big Ten Tournament, which will be tomorrow night at 6:30 Eastern Time. We're on beginning at 6 from the United Center here in Chicago. Tonight, of course, it'll be, as I mentioned earlier, the doubleheader is Minnesota against Nebraska and Wisconsin against Ohio State. And then everything gets rolling here at noon tomorrow and Eastern Time. And Penn State opens up the second session when they play Illinois tomorrow night at 6:30. We're on beginning at 6. Penn State will not shoot in the United Center tomorrow. You get limited shooting times of about 25 minutes. But they're all in the morning tomorrow. They're all in the morning. So they can't get in there today and shoot, for example. You know, can't get in there today and shoot. That goes for the four teams that are playing. They had shoot-arounds in there today. Tomorrow, it's in the morning, and you don't play again until later in the day, 5:30 here Central Time, 6:30 Eastern Time. So Micah Shrewsbury is just going to go through a normal shoot-around. They'll pick a location and take care of that and just go from there. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory with great warranties. I know I keep emphasizing that, but the warranty means so much. Pre-owned vehicles have the Sunbury Motors guarantee. They go over every vehicle. They certify it themselves. Okay? Really, they're trying to give you the best buying experience possible. And a service department that backs all of it up from the routine to the difficult, they can handle it because they have great technicians, all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. one of those guys without question, the great respect I have for him both personally and professionally, and we appreciate the time he's giving us today here in Chicago. That's Dave Revson from BTN. Dave, welcome. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Oh, it's good to be with you, and the respect is mutual, as you well know, Steve.
Oh, thanks, Dave. Dave, I'm sitting there on Sunday night, 6:30, 7 o'clock, and I still don't know who Penn State's playing. What does that tell you about what we just witnessed over the past 2.5 months of the Big Ten?
Man, it was crazy, Steve. I've never seen anything like this. I really feel like it was all capsulized in the notion that Northwestern going into that Rutgers game, which for all intents and purposes was the last game that impacted the standings in the Big Ten, could have been the second seed with a win or the ninth seed with a loss.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen anything like that. Like, it's just crazy to have 10 teams that won at least 10 conference games. That has never happened before. To have the number of close games we had, the number of overtime games, it's really been incredible. It's been a lot of fun to watch for us. I mean, it's obviously made for incredible drama and great TV, and the uncertainty of just not knowing who's going to win on a game in, game out basis, I think has been really good. It's caused a little confusion, no doubt. I mean, we certainly have a lot of teams that are kind of, Penn State obviously among them, they're kind of hanging on that bubble, right? Mm-hmm. You just don't know where it's going to go for them because we didn't have that many teams put as much distance between themselves and kind of the cut line for the NCAA tournament as we normally do. But I think when all said and done, we head to Chicago here with 11 teams thinking they legitimately have a shot to get in.
No question. One that we know is in is Northwestern. It is interesting that Ryan Young ended up transferring to Duke, Pete Nance to North Carolina. Two very good players and quality individuals, without question. And Chris Collins is not given much of a chance this year. What did you think watching them play out this season?
It is a crazy story, Steve, because not only do you lose, as you said, a starter to North Carolina and a really key reserve to Duke, but you really didn't replace him with much of anything.
Right.
I mean, they got Titus Verhoeven in the transfer portal from UTEP. He's been a decent piece for them, and I think it's kind of gotten better as it's gone along. Their freshman, one of them got hurt, who I actually think was going to be a pretty good player and will be a pretty good player. The other one has played a very spot role. So for all intents and purposes, it's the same team as last year, minus two of their three or four best players, and Nance was probably their best player last year. Really what it is they just bought in on the defensive end. I mean, Chris made a really good hire with Chris Lowry, who has come in. He was head coach of Southern Illinois, did a great job there. He's on Bruce Weber's staff for many years at Kansas State. And he basically turned over the defense to him and kind of said, hey, what do you think we're doing here? Why aren't we better? Why aren't we tougher? And they really overhauled the way that they play. And it's been a great story. And then Boo Booey, who certainly Penn State fans are familiar with, is he's the half-brother of Taylor Battle, who, of course, is on Chris's staff as well, who's really elevated his game. He just, it's a lot smarter game, I'd say, than it's been in the previous few years. We certainly saw that he had the potential in the last few years to be a really good player, but he didn't always think his way through situations on the court as well as he could. That's really changed this year. I think he takes much better shots, and he's just a leader. He's clutch. He's really good. Adige, while he has struggled offensively, has been a fabulous defender. It's just a good team. And, you know, we had Chris on our show today, and he said it's not just that guys play their roles, it's that guys star in their roles. Yeah. That, hey, if your job is to go in there and be a dirty work guy, not only do they do that, but they embrace it. And I do think that's really been the key for them.
Penn State has not had an All-American since Jesse Arnell back in the 50s, and contrary to popular belief, I did not announce those games. But Jalen Pickett, Jalen Pickett is a second-team All-American, first-team All-Big Ten. What have you seen, Dave, in the 2 years here in his development?
I just think it's been amazing. I think that we misuse the word unique a lot in sports, Steve. Unique, as you well know, is one of a kind. And I would say it kind of applies to Jalen Pickett. I mean, I can't really think of a comp for him a guard who basically plays the low post, who can shoot from the outside, but that's not his strongest suit. His strongest suit is seeing the court, is rebounding, is, you know, he's a great scorer. I mean, a guy who can go get 41 for you if you need him to. I just love him. I love his game. I love his story. I am a huge fan of the underdog, and I think a guy who comes out of high school and doesn't have a single offer and then goes to prep school to get an offer from Siena and then ends up being, as you said, you know, second-team All-American and one of the best players in an incredibly competitive league. I just think that's a great story, and you know, he just seems like, you obviously know much better than I do. The limited interaction I've had with him has been great. He's just eminently likable, and he kind of epitomizes what that team is about. I mean, they're going to play in a really unconventional way. You don't have a traditional big guy. I think that really they did an incredible job of kind of constructing a team that Micah kind of looked at what he had and said, okay, like, this is the way that we're going to win. Maybe not unlike Northwestern in some ways. Mm-hmm. You know, surround a guy who sees the court incredibly well with great shooters, and this is how we're going to do it. And man, have they done it. It's been incredible. And these last two finishes, the game against Northwestern was amazing. And then, you know, to beat Maryland in the way that they did, for Cam Winner to come in and have two straight game-winning shots, it's just been awesome.
You mentioned about the big man in this league, and you know, several guys epitomize that, whether it's a Hunter Dickinson, a Trace Jackson Davis, who in both in their own right I thought were outstanding this year. But then there's Zach Edey. You know, when you watch him, and the, you know, let's face it, he is no question, he is a wooden Naismith front runner. You know, what have you seen in his development? Because the Purdue guards got tired as the season went, and he kept playing.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about their guards here as we head into March, but Zach, I mean, it's amazing the amount of physicality that he absorbs and how well he plays through it. Now, he dishes out a fair amount of physicality as well. I do think it's fair to point that out. He's not some sort of wallflower in there, you know. But man, he is another. Just I love the stories. I'm a sucker for the stories, yeah. Steve. I've always been kind of a storyteller throughout my career, and yes, for a guy to be the 429th ranked player to average 4 points per game on his high school team, to basically have, you know, a handful of significant offers, and to come in and 3 years later be the best player in the country, I it's just amazing. I mean, there's a great piece that Matt Norlander did on CBS on him, yeah, and I mentioned this. It was right before I did their game against Northwestern. It was right before that game, and Matt Norlander pointed out that David Jenkins has played more years of college basketball than Zach Edey has played organized basketball.
That's right.
I mean, like, you think of how new he is to the game and how good he is, and he's got the advantage of being 7'4", but there are a lot of really tall guys who aren't great players. Yeah. He made himself into a player. He's incredibly disciplined. He's got a great routine. Steve, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if he comes back next year. I mean, we kind of know where the NBA's gone. Yep. It hasn't gone towards 7'4" guys. You got the NIL possibilities. It just feels to me like it would kind of make sense for him. And man, it'd be great for the Big Ten and for college hoops.
And I'm in complete agreement with you on all of that. I think he, my gut would be, I think he will come back. One last question, because I know your time is limited.
Yep.
It doesn't matter where the team is today. That's not this question. You've been able to broadcast games this season to see teams up close and personal. Give me the one day that you walked out of the gym after seeing a team play and go, wow.
Well, I guess it would probably be that Purdue-Northwestern game.
Yeah.
Just because of the enormity of the moment from Northwestern's point of view. I mean, they had never, ever beaten the number one team. Mm-hmm. And to see them do it, to see them come from eight down before right after the under four timeout, I mean, to rally to beat the number one team. Again, Purdue's fallen a few times since then. They're probably not the best team in the country, but we certainly thought they were at that point. I would say that moment, and again, just the turnaround is so crazy. I mean, if you would have told me at the beginning of the year that I was going to call Northwestern beating a number one team, I would have told you you were absolutely nuts. I will say another one of the games that sticks out to me, and I'm just kind of Rolodexing through them, was Penn State at Illinois.
Yeah,
I didn't see that coming at all, and I think that was the moment where I realized that Penn State was genuinely for real, and that, you know, kind of what I really for the first time understood what they were trying to do. Because Pickett was just sensational in that game, and they shot the ball beautifully, and it just kind of all fit together and made sense. So I would say probably those two stand out to me the most.
Dave, I know there's a lot of work to do, and you fit us in into a very busy time. I'm really looking forward to seeing you in Chicago. Thanks so much.
All right, Steve. Yep, we'll see you there on Thursday.
Yep. Thanks so much, Dave.
All right, man.
Dave Revson, BTN, one of the best in the business. And if you think he's terrific on the air, which most of you do, you know, Dave has just great talent and a personality that has great wearability, which is so important in this business. But he's just a great guy. You know, I think we spend, when we're chit-chatting about stuff, we spend more time talking about the kids, travel, things like that. He's just one of the best. All right. So there's a lot going on, obviously. And we can break down games and things like that. And I'm not going to do that because there's the topic. Here we are sitting on the 8th of March. And George Kliavkov, I believe, is going to be meeting with the media later today in Las Vegas. That's where the Pac-12 tournament is taking place. And they don't have a media deal yet. And we've talked about John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News. He's done a great job. John Canzano out in Portland, Oregon, has done a great job. Tony Knopp has kept us in the loop the entire time with his sources. He's done a phenomenal job. That's why we keep having him on the show. And we, by the way, have asked John Wilner on. We're going to get John on at some point. We will make that happen. Very rarely have I seen the Los Angeles Times weigh in. I remember when it broke that USC and UCLA were leaving. That's about the last time I really saw a lot from the Los Angeles Times on it. And then yesterday, the LA Times came out with a long article by Brady McCullough. And in it, the topic is the Pac-12 really this bad? Why the league has no TV deal without USC and UCLA? And he went through and he outlined everything. You know, the Pac-12 went through its 90-day exclusivity window. It then closed. The Pac-12 then jumped in during their exclusivity window and landed a 6-year deal with ESPN and Fox for $2.3 billion. And you remember, everybody thought that they were going to be dead in the water because they lost Texas and Oklahoma. Bob Bowlesby was able to pick up the pieces, as Tony and I talked about earlier in the show. They were able to get Houston, UCF, Cincinnati, and BYU in, and they have this TV deal. Now they're set for 6 years. They're in great shape. We all know what UCLA and USC meant. And to the conference. There's no question about that. And everybody knows that with them on board, they could have picked up a significant TV deal. And the feeling is that the Big Ten probably picked up an extra $250 million in extra revenue because they added the Los Angeles market and the brands, especially the brand of USC, to go with UCLA. And what are the best options for them right now? Well, guess what? They have Pac-12 After Dark to offer. But that's 2 games a week. That's Friday night at 10:30 Eastern time, and that's Saturday night at 10:30 Eastern time. That's what they have to offer at this point. That's a problem. And Brady McCullough points out Fox, quote, can easily fill its Saturday night slot with the Mountain West on FS1 and not have to spend any more money on the Pac-12. the problem the Pac-12 has right now is they have gone from a conference where we must have them to it's nice to have them. That doesn't get you any money. And that is a big problem. Expansion. SMU and San Diego State give them more inventory, but they don't move the needle. That's a problem. SMU's not a big deal in Dallas, and it's San Diego State certainly does not rule Southern California. Not even close. They represent Southern California, but that's about it. And as he points out, that many people assumed, as he writes, when USC and UCLA left for the Big Ten, many assumed Washington and Oregon would be next, forming a Western pot of sorts. He writes this directly, and this is something we have been trying to say over and over again on this show. From all the people I have talked to, all the people I have interviewed, people they've talked to, the Big Ten decided to stop at 16 schools with the LA teams. Okay? Now, could they still end up in the Big Ten? Sure. But that's not, at least from what I can tell, in the immediate future. So what's their best option? Staying in the Pac-12 and ride it out for maybe a little bit longer. When I mean ride it out for maybe the full 5 years. Because I think the Pac-12 TV deal is going to be a shorter one, and then you find out what's going to happen after that. The four corner schools, Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah. Hey, boy. That's where the Big 12 comes in. The Big 10's not going to consider them. And you know what's galling to the people at Utah and talking to them about this? Because obviously saw them at the Rose Bowl. Is they, as a university, busted their backside to get AAU status for the Pac-12 and finally got there 4 years ago. And now they're all sitting there saying, okay, exactly why did we do this? Right? And the Big 12 is sitting there and they are not shy about saying, hey, you know what? The door is not closed here. But you have a power two in the SEC and the Big 10. The Big 12 is sitting in a really good spot. And I keep pointing out over and over again, Clemson and Florida State can bellow all they want. They're stuck. Right? They have documents right there with signatures from their presidents saying that they are bound till 2036 because they wanted the ACC network, which they have. All right. Back here in Chicago tomorrow. Looking forward to it. Penn State, Illinois, 6:30, 6 o'clock, the airtime. Show will get underway tomorrow, as it always does, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.